we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, April the 14th, 2017, and I'm your host, Sinead Sanders. I'm joined here today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
And Allison Cole on the controls.
Hi there. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. So today's show is packed with some great local superheroes for animals. World Day for Laboratory Animals is coming up on Monday, April the 24th. And today we'll feature an interview with Laura-Lee Shaw, president of the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society of BC. She joins us on the show to talk about what is happening to animals in laboratories today and some of the work being done to help them. We're also joined in studio by two organizers from local advocacy group Vancouver Chicken Save, Megan Beattie and Mick McCann, who meet every week in front of our friendly local chicken slaughterhouse at Hastings Street and Commercial Drive to bear witness and raise awareness of the needless suffering endured by chickens behind slaughterhouse walls. But first, today also happens to be Good Friday. This is the start of Easter weekend, and we're going to take a few minutes to discuss some of the ways animals are impacted by some common Easter traditions. So first, for those who don't know, what is Easter? I've got this quick definition here. Easter is the celebration of the resurrection of Jesus from the tomb on the third day after his crucifixion. Easter is the fulfilled prophecy of the Messiah who would be persecuted, die for our sins, and rise on the third day. Remembering the resurrection of Jesus is a way to renew daily hope that we have victory over sin. And what better way to claim victory over sin than killing baby animals when you don't have to, hey?
Mm-hmm.
Jen, how do you feel about Easter and common Easter traditions when it comes to animals?
Well, I actually just spoke with my mom on the phone before we started our show today, and I haven't been over to Victoria, my hometown, in probably over 6 months. And she said, "Are you coming for Easter? Shannon, my sister, is having an Easter dinner." And I know better than to ask what's being served because I know it's animal products. I said, "Not if there's animal products being served, Mom." And this is always the issue. I don't know why we have to celebrate loving family holidays with the slaughter of animals. When will this end?
It all comes down to tradition, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And I heard online on Facebook that they're actually selling whole, I think they're wrapped, whole lambs at Costco.
Wow.
Of all places. I might be heading there today and just to bear witness to it myself. It's just astounding to me. I know there's body parts being sold in stores all the time, but it's easier to disassociate oneself from what they actually are when they're chopped into tiny pieces or ground up. When it's a whole entire lamb, I'm imagining this lamb that's shrink wrapped. Lambs are the sweetest, most pure creatures on the planet, as are all baby animals.
Well,
all
that's actually
baby animals.
Maybe that's a good thing that it's packaged in that way, because I think that will force people to look at that for a moment.
Yeah,
and go,
someone
wow.
wrote online that even meat eaters were complaining about it, but it has to do with Passover, and so
right.
It's for people who are celebrating that holiday. And again, it comes down to tradition, right? So how can we change traditions, right? Because people still want to celebrate their holidays. And I was just chatting with Sinead before the show that we both have the same book. It's the Super Fun Holiday Cookbook by Issa Shenra Moskovitz. And we had her on the show in December to talk about celebrating the holidays compassionately, because this book is packed with beautiful recipes for every holiday, including Easter. I was totally looking through that chapter this week and have been thinking of things that I'd like to make. And there's alternatives in there for the traditional types of foods that people like to eat at Easter, such as, I didn't even really know this before, but eggs. Right, mm-hmm. Sinead. And you said you might want to make those devilish potatoes, which I did make. I said on the show before I was going to make them. They're so fun to make. And they kind of mimic eggs. They look like hard-boiled stuffed eggs. And it's a way to maintain that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
People like to keep in line with tradition, but it doesn't mean you have to give up your traditions. You just change them to make them more compassionate.
Yeah. And, you know, like whether it's eggs, whether it's a lamb or a fish or a pig, like many Easter feasts are centered around the bodies of individuals who didn't want or need to die. So it's like, you know, start a new tradition that actually is more in line with what you're celebrating. You know, eggs are a symbol at Easter because they're supposed to represent rebirth, you know. But,
and that's what Easter's about, is rebirth and life.
Mm-hmm.
Then why can't we plant flowers?
Yes, exactly.
We can plant flowers.
Yeah.
Plant flowers, Jen, and start a new
tradition. I just planted my whole summer vegetable garden.
That's actually what I was thinking about, because one common Easter tradition when I was a kid, and a lot of people still do this, is painting eggs.
Right.
And the egg industry, as we've discussed on the show before, is there's a lot of death and suffering involved with the egg industry.
Like, go to animalvoices.org and look up eggs if you mm-hmm. want to find out more. We've done lots about this on the show in the past.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of these traditions that completely disregard that suffering and that injustice, then, you know, start something new. Paint wooden eggs or paint anything, or as you were saying, plant something. Like, that is the ultimate.
And you know what, something I was thinking of today as an alternative to celebrating the death of baby animals is, why don't you celebrate the life of these animals, and you can visit a local farmed animal sanctuary where you can see chicks and chickens and ducks and goslings and baby goats, as Megan has done in the past and has now grown up to see, or the goats have grown up to see Megan on a regular basis. and then people eat ham during Easter. That's a pig.
There
are beautiful pigs at sanctuaries that love to have their bellies rubbed. And once you meet one of these pigs, you're not going to want to eat the pig. Trust me, like, we need to connect ourselves with who these animals really are. I met sheep for the first time a couple years ago at a sanctuary in Maryland in the U.S. And I was just so overwhelmed with emotion of how emotional these animals are, and how much that struck me is they're such sentient beings. Mm-hmm. And to be able to connect with a sheep who was once a lamb, who's now wrapped up in Costco waiting to be treated as an object.
Absolutely. And another way that animals are treated as objects at Easter is a lot of rabbits get bought and sold as pets, and even baby chickens, little chicks, and sometimes they even dye them. In some places in the world, they dye them different colors. And they sell them as these novelty items, and they just wind up in shelters or just released into...
If you're listening to this, please don't buy your children a bunny or a chick for Easter. Please think again. Take them to a sanctuary. We have local animal sanctuaries here.
Mm-hmm. Adopt, don't shop. And if you're going to get a rabbit, then commit to that rabbit, because that's somebody with a life.
Did you know that the former prime minister of Italy just adopted 5 baby lambs as a way of encouraging people to go vegetarian for Easter?
He's awesome.
Wow.
He did evade taxes. He's not the greatest person, but maybe this is redemption.
The best of us evade taxes sometimes. You know what?
He has
my heart because he did that. And thanks for sharing that. That's so encouraging. Mm-hmm.
So for a truly peaceful and nonviolent Easter, we'd encourage you to try out a new vegan recipe instead of feasting on the flesh of someone who
didn't
want
to die. Google and look on our Facebook page. Yeah. Sinead posted lots today this week at Animal Voices Vancouver.
Yeah, Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook, and also on our website, animalvoices.org. I put some links in there. Happy Easter, everybody.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
And now for some news. Taiwan has become the first country in Asia to ban the consumption of cat and dog meat. People who sell, purchase, or eat cat and dog meat will now face hefty fines and potentially even a prison sentence. Landmark amendments to animal protection laws, which have been approved by the Taiwanese government, will see those found guilty being named and shamed in facing fines of up to $10,000 Canadian. Those charged with intentionally harming or torturing animals could meanwhile be jailed for up to 2 years and fined $87,000 Canadian. While tougher sanctions will apply for repeat offenders. The series of amendments raises a host of issues around animal welfare and reveals changing attitudes in Taiwan, where dogs are now widely seen as pets. Under the new law, it will also be made illegal to walk animals on a leash alongside dangerous motor vehicles such as scooters. In Vancouver news, a 12-year-old Vancouver-based animal rights activist named Kingston Walters met with Jane Goodall, who was in town earlier this week, and asked why we have sanctuaries for elephants, chimpanzees, tigers, etc., but no sanctuaries exist for whales and dolphins. He wanted to know why this was. Jane agreed with the young activist's stance that there is no use for cetaceans in captivity because the harm for mammals outweighs anything else, and the risk of harm is great for cetaceans in captivity. When asked what gives her hope for the future of this planet, Jane said that she finds hope in our youth who are working to make the world a better place, but we must act now and eliminate human greed or there will be no future for our youth's grandchildren. Phil Demers, an animal rights activist and former marine mammal trainer who worked at Niagara Falls Marine Land for 12 years, gave testimony at the Senate hearings this week on Bill S-203, which would ban the importation and breeding of cetaceans in captivity. There are only two facilities in Canada that partake in the practice, Marine Land and Vancouver Aquarium. The latter has since been banned by the Vancouver Parks Board from keeping captive cetaceans. Phil Demers delivered a lengthy and authoritative speech detailing the abuse and neglect that he witnessed toward the animals, which included, among many other atrocities, marine mammals going blind and having their skin bleed and peel off from the chlorinated water, animals being given harmful drugs not meant for them as they are stuffed into fish and thrown into tanks and the wrong animals would eat them, young belugas and dolphins being attacked by larger aggressive males in their tanks. Phil mentioned the massive on-site grave which he personally had to bury animals in. The Vancouver Aquarium has sent 5 harbor seals to marine land, 1 died, and 4 became blind from the chlorinated pools. Things heated up in the Senate meeting as the marine land whistleblower Phil Demers accused Manitoba Senator Don Blatt of colluding with marine land to promote their financial interests. Phil has been threatened with violence and been stalked by Marineland's owner, on top of being the recipient of a slap suit for frivolous reasons, causing him grave financial hardship. In local news, 3 Chilliwack cattle sales workers were convicted of violating the British Columbia Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act. Travis Kiefer, Chris Van Dyke, and Jamie Visser pleaded guilty to animal cruelty charges and will be sentenced in early May. Today's convictions were prompted by a Mercy for Animals undercover investigation at Chilliwack Cattle Sales, the largest dairy farm in Canada. Hidden camera footage reveals workers viciously kicking, punching, and beating cows with chains, metal pipes, canes, and rakes, and gleefully poking and squeezing the festering wounds of cows suffering from oozing infections and gruesome injuries.
Thank you very much for the news, Jen. All right, so if you ever find yourself near the very north end of Commercial Drive where it intersects with Hastings Street, you probably wouldn't pay any notice to a large gray box of a building sitting on the northeast corner. From the outside, it doesn't appear remarkable in any way, but what makes it exceptional is the suffering that takes place on the inside. The thousands of individuals who are abused and killed behind those walls on a daily basis. If these were, say, puppies or kittens, you may have seen some backlash and heard about it in the news, but this is the Hallmark Poultry Slaughterhouse, and the young birds who suffer inside are typically ignored as easily as the walls that conceal them. that is where our first guests come in. Megan Beattie and Mick McCann are organizers for local advocacy group Vancouver Chicken Save, which aims to shine a light on what is happening behind slaughterhouse walls. Hello, Megan and Mick, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi.
Hello, welcome. Sinead. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
So, this is happening.
Yeah.
So Vancouver Chicken Save is part of a larger movement called the Save Movement. So to start off, for listeners who aren't aware, what is the Save Movement? What does Vancouver Chicken Save do?
Well, the Save Movement was started by this amazing human, Anita Crines, in 2010. She's out east in the Toronto area. And I think, as the story goes, she was walking her dog, Mr. Bean, and came across, she would see trucks pulling into a slaughterhouse and noticed that she was able to kind of see the pigs inside the trucks and bear witness to them. And then boom, 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 got people to come and bear witness with her, and it grew and grew and grew. And now there's pig saves, there's chicken saves, there's animal saves, there's sheep saves, cow saves, all over the world, I think. Well, thank you for your research, Sinead.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
130 groups globally. And I'd just like to give a shout out to Mary Chris Staples, who with Liberation BC about 5 years ago maybe started doing chicken vigils.
She's amazing. We've had her featured as for an activist profile in the show before, if people want to learn more about Mary Chris.
Yeah.
On our website.
Yeah, she moved out east about 2 years ago, I guess. And so Liberation BC was still doing the vigils, but then I started working with the Save Movement, and we kind of did a transition, and now the vigils at Hallmark are under Vancouver Chicken Save, and we go and bear witness to the chickens in the back alley, which is a really unique experience for us, because compared to the other saves, because usually they're outside of the slaughterhouses and there are gates and not many people can see the actual chickens or the animals, save for going past in the trucks. But this way we're able to be right there and see them go from one end to the other. So yeah, it's an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't make you vegan, I don't know what will. I went to one a couple of weeks ago, and even before that, I saw some video footage taken by one of the activists, Jeff Vergeer, and I guess it was at the end of the day, and out of some pipe, I suppose, there were what's left over after a day of slaughter, and it was piles of chicken heads and chicken feet amid slime and guts, and I just started crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of this stuff before. I'm at the point where it doesn't make me cry so much anymore, but I mean, how can you not go vegan when you see that?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a river of blood sometimes when it overfills in the tanks.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we should mention too that if you live in this neighborhood, if you find yourself in East Van, especially in the summertime, if you notice this prevailing smell,
just lingers and never goes
that
away.
Lingers in the air to the north end of the drive.
I often mention on the show is I can smell it on the way to and from the station, and we pass a block away when we're driving here.
Mm-hmm.
You can smell it. It's grotesque. If you're ever wondering, it's the smell of death.
Yes,
definitely. Yes, and that's more on our end and our discomfort, but also being there and bearing witness, you hear the noise. It's so loud.
Wow.
And just kind of putting yourself in the chicken's feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, why is bearing witness so important?
I think it's so important because we all watch videos like Earthlings or Cowspiracy, and these are often done in the States or other parts of the world. So when you get to see it, videos and footage of what's happening 1 to 2 blocks from your house, it makes a much bigger impact. Because a lot of people will use cop-outs, like back home they would say, oh, but that only happens in the States, and that only happens in China, and in Ireland we are really good to our animals, and they're all just, it's complete cop-outs. They're just
like, how do they think
don't
the chickens get killed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Megan, you've been posting videos and photos online. I don't know how many views you're getting on those, thousands, I hope, but you're posting the reality of what's happening just a few blocks away here in Vancouver. I'm assuming these chickens are going for consumption in the city.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of people in Vancouver who eat chickens.
Mm-hmm. The packages are actually labeled Hallmark chicken.
Yeah,
in the
yeah there's
store.
Hallmark.
I don't know the brands because I don't buy.
Heritage,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where that would even be
and
sold.
Even the humanely raised, which we don't believe in, but even those ones are killed in the same slaughter.
That's the thing that I think, as conscious as people try to be in their delusions of buying happy meat, no matter what the lives are of the animals, they all go to the same style. There's no
exact
humane
place.
Slaughterhouse.
Yeah, and I think something about bearing witness too, you know, if you were in that situation of those birds, you know, would you want people to just walk by and ignore it? If you were stuck in a truck and you were grossly abused and you were suffering, would you want people to ignore it? Or would you want people to pay attention and bear witness and acknowledge what's happening to you? I think it's really,
absolutely,
really great what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. And what would you all do out there, you listeners who might be meat eaters, if you saw somebody abusing a dog on a sidewalk? There's no way you would walk by. Well,
no.
We're doing the same thing for animals that are mm-hmm. considered food.
So speaking of these birds and their experiences, then the birds that wind up at Hallmark are broiler chickens farmed for their meat. So what do you witness at the Hallmark poultry slaughterhouse? What does the life of a typical broiler chicken look like?
Well, it seems it's very boring.
Yeah.
The trucks come in super early in the morning and they're stacked up, and who knows, hours and hours these chickens are in these coops, and some of them are way up high in the air and just squished, uncomfortable.
In any conditions,
they're like
too.
Crates, aren't they?
Yeah.
People may have seen these passing by.
They have to crouch
by.
In them. They're yeah. so mm-hmm. small.
They do drive them in Vancouver because they're getting to this central location at Commercial and Hastings. And you might have seen them on the road, and they're stacked crates.
Yeah.
Not a lot of room.
Really and squished. Often their feet come off when they're taken out of the crates.
Yeah.
There's actually one of the jobs for a worker is when the crates go through their little
conveyor belt.
Thank you, Jen. They are tipped over so that they can get dumped out, and a worker has a stick to kind of poke them, any that are holding on for dear life.
Or whose legs are stuck in
yeah.
them and
yeah.
they have
yes,
no way to
exactly.
get themselves out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these are, like we talked before about, if we saw puppies in this situation, we'd be horrified.
Can you imagine?
These are young birds,
the babies.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like 5 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people imagine baby chickens as being these cute little chicks, but these mm-hmm. birds, they're a few weeks old and they're big.
People might be wondering why we're killing chickens who are 5 weeks old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These birds are bred. They're
yeah.
bred to
grow as fast, as big as possible.
Mm-hmm. And
in short amount of time as possible.
That's to the detriment of their own health, which of course,
yeah.
you know.
Causes heart problems and broken legs, and often some of them can't even walk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what kinds of responses do you get from people when you share this information with them? People on the street or even the workers themselves?
Well, I can speak to the people on the street. We have had people come up to us like, walk by and then come back and thank us for doing what we're doing and that they agree. We ask them to hold a sign with us. Mm. Some of them do, some of them don't. Everyone has busy lives, I guess. But as well, the whole honking thing, I think is really, because it, like you said in the intro, this building is very nondescript. Like
yeah,
you
never
drive
notice
by
no
it
markings.
And you never notice it. And so
there,
we
well,
are
no,
there.
There usually aren't. Although I went to a pig slaughterhouse in L.A. and there's a mural of happy pigs on a farm all across
gross.
It.
It goes.
That's where the L.A. pig saves happening now.
Oh,
it's pretty
right.
gross. Pretty,
yeah. So even if, you know, we're getting honks from people, then everyone around is kind of wondering what's going on and look over. And yeah, so I think we get a good, every once in a while we have people scream out to us, I love KFC.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of silliness. But as far as the workers.
Yeah, the workers, they take a lot of photographs. Mm-hmm. I don't think they don't like us at all. We try not to be disrespectful to them because we know that they're probably having a hard go of it as well. And I'm sure nobody wants to be doing that job.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely don't think they like us at all.
I heard about you guys finding chicken feet outside on Saturdays. Is that
yeah.
something that happens?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
this is something that they leave out for you, you think? Or is this just
no.
something that they just wind up there?
Yeah, I think they would prefer if we don't see anything like that.
Yeah, it's just a matter of it's so filthy and there's such an overflow that
Okay, yeah.
It just pours out.
When they're spraying to kind of clean the floor, maybe they get sprayed out.
Speaking of the spraying, when I was there, I noticed nonstop water flowing into a drain. Mm. If you don't care about animal welfare, consider the impact on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Slaughterhouses use a lot of water.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Great and point, Jen.
And to spray us. They had a tactic a couple weeks ago where, under the guise of cleaning, they would spray us.
Mm. Yeah. I guess you got a free shower.
Yeah, I know. I live in Vancouver. I don't care.
It was probably already raining.
Yeah, yeah.
And you do go out there in the rain. And mm-hmm. I just commend you for that because you've been posting your videos and I see it and I'm at home dry and I'm just astounded. Like, you're a superhero, Megan. I know you don't have, I mean, like all your free time to do this because you work a lot too. It's not like, you know, when people yell out, get a job, which I've heard so many times. You're gainfully employed, as a lot of us are. And we make time.
Absolutely.
We make time for this because it's important.
Yeah.
So for those who acknowledge this information and this suffering and decide they no longer want to support the abuse and needless killing of sentient individuals for profit, what would you recommend people consume instead of chicken or other animal products?
It's getting way, way, way easier than it was a decade ago. Now so many companies, even big companies, are buying into vegan meat substitutes. So many restaurants are doing it. Tofu is sold everywhere. Gardein is sold everywhere. Tempeh. Seitan's super easy to make. Chickpeas, nuts, legumes, beans.
Mm-hmm. Chickpeas, so, not chickens.
Yeah, chickpeas, not chickens.
And people worry about their protein, right? So you're giving some like high protein plant examples, but you can get all your protein from plants if you
protein's
listen to the
show. Everything.
You know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Protein isn't everything.
Yeah.
And plant-based natural products.
Yeah.
Yes, great David. David is Mr.
Local animal rights activist who is an incredible vegan chef who sells products.
He makes great meat substitutes out of various things.
Like meat.
They're
delicious.
Yeah. And of course, you know, there's tons of takeout options. I have friends who say, oh, well, I don't know what to get instead of chicken. And it's like, falafel instead of doner, chana masala instead of chicken curry, tofu teriyaki, veggie burgers, bean burritos. There's so much of those.
So easy now.
If you go to an Asian place, you can usually get, instead of chicken, you get tofu instead.
Yeah.
It tastes really good.
Mm-hmm.
So just
go
do
to Pokong.
It.
And there are three vegan Chinese restaurants in Vancouver.
That
Pokong,
Jen knows very
Sun Pokong, and 3G.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Delicious. I go there too much.
Yeah, me too. I love Pokong.
So aside from choosing not to consume chicken products, how else can listeners support Vancouver Chicken Safe?
Come to the vigils.
Tomorrow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's Friday today, right?
Yeah. Yes. It's tomorrow. You get to meet the
holidays.
Celebrities that are on air today.
Ooh.
Maybe they'll give you an autograph.
It's really good because you get to meet... other activists that are doing, everyone meets there on a Saturday, but the 10 of us or 20 of us are all doing other things during the week. So you get to meet everyone in one like little hub, which is super important because you don't feel as alone when you're doing activism. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the best part for me because everyone's doing their own thing.
So everyone's welcome, right? And what time?
Everyone.
What time do you show up on a Saturday?
9 a.m.
Yeah, be there.
Commercial and Hastings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all everyone's always super nice and welcoming. That's the best part.
You don't have to know anything. We'll teach you.
And you've got, we've got a screening coming up that we're putting on together, Vancouver Chicken Safe and Animal Voices. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. I haven't actually watched it yet, but I saw the trailer called To Rescue, the documentary. And it's just this mother and son who went around and interviewed and wanted to make this movie about farm animal sanctuaries in the States. And we are doing a screening of it, Vancouver Chicken Safe, with Animal Voices for June 9th. We're having a couple events in and around the March to Close All Slaughterhouses that is on Saturday, June 10th.
Which
at
you should come to as well.
5:30 to 8 at SFU downtown.
Mm. Wonderful. Well, we will be announcing that in the weeks to come to remind everybody to attend. Well, thank you so much, Megan and Mick.
Thanks so much
for joining
for
us.
So fun.
Yeah, in the studio today. It's good stuff. So to learn more and get info on the next weekly vigil, you can visit the Vancouver Chicken Save Facebook page. We'd also like to mention that both a Surrey Chicken Save and a Langley Pig Save exist in our area, so you can check them out on Facebook as well. To find out more about the Save movement in general and for a complete list of Save groups from all across across the globe, you can visit thesavemovement.org.
And now for some events. Saturday, April 22nd, from 3 to 6 p.m., meet up with some animal rights advocates at the Vancouver Aquarium to educate the public about the cruelty of captivity. Signs and information will be provided. Also on Saturday, April 22nd, from 7 to 10 p.m., the Victoria Public Market take part in the Vegans Night Out hosted by The Very Good Butchers, the newest vegan butcher shop. On Saturday, April 29th, from 12 to 2, come and march peacefully in support of World Week for Animals in Laboratories to commemorate the millions of animals that suffer and die in laboratories or for dissection every year. In Canada, more than 3.5 million animals are used annually. Meet at St. Paul's Hospital at 1081 Burrard Street. More information on Facebook under March for Animals in Laboratories. This Saturday and every Saturday, join today's radio guests, Megan Beattie and Mick McCann, at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse from 9 to 11 a.m. at the corner of Commercial and Hastings. Bear witness to the lives and deaths of these innocent sentient beings and meet some inspirational and loving vegan animal rights activists. Mark your calendars for Sunday, April the 30th at 8 p.m. Come and see the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered at Eternal Abundance Vegan Cafe, 1025 Commercial Drive. Cover is $5, includes tea and a cookie. It goes towards the event space rental, and the film director will be there to do a Q&A afterwards. And that's it for our events.
Thank you very much, Jen. So, World Day for Laboratory Animals is coming up on Monday, April 24th, and today we're featuring an interview with Laura Lee Shaw, president of the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society of British Columbia. She joins us on the show to talk about the current use of vivisection, that is, the use of live animals in scientific research and experiments, as well as some of the work being done to help end the suffering of animals in laboratories. Hello, Laura Lee, and welcome back to Animal Voices.
Hi, and thank you very much. We really appreciate you hosting us today.
Yes, well, it's our pleasure. World Lab Animal Day has been observed every April since it started in Britain 38 years ago in 1979. Your own organization was started in 1927 and is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year. So, people have been speaking out against animal experiments for a very long time. What is happening today? Who is still testing on animals?
Well, again, it's with thanks. First, may I say that for April 24th, we prefer to call it World Day for Animals in Laboratories rather than World Day for Lab Animals, because to say it's a laboratory animal, people will think that the animals belong in the labs, that they belong to the labs, and that's far from the truth. These animals deserve to be free, living the life nature intended for them, but instead they are animals captive in laboratories. So on April 24th, we are celebrating World Day for Animals in Laboratories and trying to raise awareness. The struggle of animals and their use in science goes back centuries. Even so far as the 1800s, Queen Victoria convened a committee to look into what she called vivisection being an abuse of our power over animals. And she actually achieved a ban on the use of animals in surgical training in England. Again, we're talking the 1800s. In many ways, she was more progressive than we are today. It took ADAV's constant pressure until the 1990s here in Vancouver to end the use of animals in UBC's third-year surgical training. ADAV, having been around for such a long time, we were started by a veterinarian, and yes, we're 90 in May. We've also worked with other animal rights groups to end pound seizures of shelter animals in BC. Before that, a lab could go to the pound and demand that they surrender a helpless stray or a lost pet who once had a home. These animals then had no human to protect them, and they were subjected to unendurable pain until they were ultimately killed. The pound seizures, they actually still continue in parts of Canada, like Ontario. Are you listening? They need to change. There was a CBC documentary a few years ago about a senior pet that had wandered from Texas Humans Yard and was picked up, sold off to a lab, and the poor family searched but could find no trace of their dog until, I don't recall if it was his body or his collar was returned to them by the lab after they'd killed him. So many changes do need to be made.
So where is the majority of animal testing taking place? Is this universities? Is this pharmaceutical companies? I actually read a statistic from the Canadian Council on Animal Care saying that 2/3 of animal research are unrelated to advancing human medicine in any way. It's cosmetics and cleaning products and stuff. And also the military. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, we can. UBC, which we deal a lot with, it's the second largest biomedical campus in Canada after the U of T. And UBC, we've pressured them for a number of years. We started with them in about 2007. And they now release the number of animals that they annually use. It's up to 200,000 animals per year go through there with meeting untimely ends. Now, 1/3 of those animals suffer at the highest level of pain and distress. That's category D and E, which we're currently lobbying the federal government to end that degree of pain and suffering on animals. If people check our website at adavsociety.org, they can find action items that they can do to help push this forward. With respect to the household cleaners and other items, major companies, they're doing the testing on that. It's personal care items, hair care, cosmetics. It's firms like Procter & Gamble, which now call themselves P&G. L'Oreal, they bought out Aveda, the body shop. They also sold to a conglomerate, Aveeno 3M. When we propose anti-cruelty legislation, these companies have a lot of money and power, and they have lobbyists that fight against us in order to shut down the changes we're proposing. One was recently put before federal parliament this past year and unfortunately was not successful. What we ask people, when you're purchasing a product, if you don't see a leaping bunny symbol on the back or another cruelty-free designation, then don't buy it. Buy something else that is cruelty-free. And then go one step further where you call the company, the offending company, and you tell them, I'm not buying your product. You test on animals. I've done this many times, and I actually had success with one dog food company where after several conversations, the company owner said he was going to rethink their testing practices. So money talks. They will change if we press them to.
Someone might assume that there's some government body that monitors what happens in research labs, offering these animals some amount of protection. But in Canada, this is pretty far from reality, isn't it? What can you tell us about the Canadian Council on Animal Care?
Well, Canada is the only G8 country that doesn't have a real regulatory body to oversee the care and the treatment of research animals. All we have is the CCAC, and that's a voluntary group mostly made up of animal research stakeholders. And so they're not representing the animals, they're representing their own interests. And the CCAC, they only deal with publicly funded labs, schools, and institutions. They're not dealing with the private companies. So for those animals, there's absolutely no oversight. CCAC can only go into a lab every 3 years, and they give advance notice of their upcoming inspections. So it's certainly not representative of what's going on because people have a chance to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
So until we can get the animals out of the labs, which of course is our ultimate goal, we demand and the animals need a CCAC, a Canadian Council on Animal Care that's publicly funded, not relying on donations from special interest groups, and give them the real power to implement better standards of care, to instigate change, and to issue penalties. In 2013, they went into UBC to do an assessment, and they've certainly been there before. In 2010, UBC was written up for their housing on primate and UBC has yet to tell us if they've made the improvements that they were told to make. But in 2013, they found that animals were enduring pain and suffering far longer than the researcher had applied for permission to do. These animals were stuck in a loop with no way out. No one was watching over them. And it shouldn't happen. They did get written up about that, but again, we don't know. Have they really cleaned up their act in that regard? Have they changed so that animals, they ask, can we do this to an animal for this period of time to have this end result? We need someone overseeing to make sure that the experiment is actually shut down at that end result point and not carried on further.
Mm-hmm. So these experiments undoubtedly cause suffering. Many of them are in fact designed to measure pain. So for products that can't be claimed to be essential to human health, like cleaning products and cosmetics, what motivates companies like cosmetic companies to keep testing on animals? Why would they want to inflict that kind of pain on somebody for something like lipstick?
Well, firstly, I mean, they test on animals as an alibi. If it didn't kill the rat, it won't kill the human, so they say. And they're limiting their liability. There's huge lobby groups that are in behind the animal testing. There's people that make so much money off of transporting the animals, the people that make the manufacturing of their feed, people that make the cages. There's employees that look after the animals. It's in their best interest to keep all of this going. So the regulators require, likely with the influence of the companies that benefit from animal testing, they require that things be tested. Huh. It doesn't make any sense to me.
In the case of medicine, then, it's often said that animals in labs experience necessary suffering, that these experiments are morally justified because the benefits to human health outweigh non-human suffering. Many researchers, including some at institutions such as UBC, claim that vivisection is essential to the advancement of medicine, and we wouldn't be where we are today without it. What can you tell us about that?
Well, what we ask them is, how many new treatments for stroke have emerged in the last 30 years? One of the research methods that's going on right now for stroke is they're putting small styrofoam balls into the circulatory system of animals to simulate a stroke. Can you imagine? It's barbaric, and it's not advancing them any further. The real progress in medicine comes from population studies, from clinical non-animal research. But sadly, again, the regulators insist that animals be used despite the species difference. We are human. They are animals. So, in fact, we're likely turning our backs on actual cures and treatment breakthroughs because the methods tested, they just don't work on animals.
I've heard of some products being past, you know, they get put out there based on tests that worked well for animals, and humans wind up getting sick or dying as a result.
Absolutely.
And heard of some other medications and such that weren't passed because they didn't work on animals. But of course, you know, we could be missing things there.
Well, sure. The polio vaccine was delayed for generations because it didn't work on monkeys. And Vioxx, as another example, that's an arthritis medication. It went through all the regulatory testing. It passed until it killed over 100,000 people. I think it was 130,000, and caused over 300,000 heart attacks and strokes in humans. And then they pulled it off.
Wow.
And there's a cannabis-derived medication that was recently tested in France, and all of these worked on animals. And if a researcher tells you, well, we didn't test it on enough animals, that's baloney. The cannabis one, when they went to clinical trials with some young men, there was about a dozen of them that were brain damaged, and one young man actually died during clinical trials of this product. 92% of the products that are tested on animals never make it to market. of the 8% that do, then 50% of those actually get pulled off the market because there's all kinds of adverse reactions that they had never considered.
Wow.
So we're dealing with a very, very small amount of products that actually make it. And yet those 92% that didn't make it, how many of them, if they had tested it on human cells or clinical trials, we may have reaped all kinds of medical benefits, but they got turned away because, like thalidomide, it didn't work on a rat. Or, no, my apologies, it worked on a rat, it didn't work on a human. What about the medications that don't work on animals, so they never make it for humans? Try.
We talk about exploring and encouraging alternatives to animal testing. And a while back, we had Dr. Ray Greek on the show, president of the group Americans for Medical Advancement. And he said that the word alternative is misleading in this context because it suggests what we're doing is already working well, which, as you've said, it isn't. So to use his analogy, finding an alternative for animal testing to advance human medicine is like busing to work as an alternative to burrowing your way there underground. Yeah. So I won't ask you about alternatives. I'll ask you what kinds of more ethical and efficient research methods exist that could replace testing on animals.
We can be doing things in petri dishes. We can have genetic screening. Well, we've already got genetic screening. We've got computer modeling, DNA chips. We can go back to the test tube. We've got the opportunity to use a person's own system in the cell form and apply a medication to it and see how those cells react to it. We don't need to be using animals for it. We have all sorts of science that can replace animal experiments. 3D printed cells, those are in the works. We don't need animals in the labs. We're just perpetuating old school thinking. And that's preventing a lot of medical breakthroughs, I think.
Allison, I think you had a question.
Yeah. Hi, Laurie. I'm interested in knowing how Canada compares to other countries and the measures that they've taken to reduce the suffering of animals in laboratories.
Well, unfortunately, Canada's woefully lacking. It's estimated we go through about 3.5 million animals a year in labs. We don't have actual numbers on the private labs because, again, we have no overseeing body. Other G8 nations have protections in place for animals in labs. And, for example, other NATO nations, they've stopped using animals in military trauma training. But here in Canada, there's no restrictions placed on researchers and nor on the training officers. We still use them. We need to model ourselves more after the UK, where inspectors can go into any lab at any time, be it private or public, without warning, and to investigate and enforce compliance. Canada, I'm sorry to say, is rather spineless in this area.
So the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society of BC is based here in Vancouver. And as we said, you're about to celebrate your 90th anniversary. Congratulations. What kind of work has ADAV been doing to help animals in laboratories here in this area?
Well, and earlier I said we're celebrating our 90th, but that was, I shouldn't have phrased it that way.
Yeah.
I wish we weren't in business. I wish that we were obsolete, no longer needed. But at the work we've been doing to try and get the animals out of the labs, because that's our goal, to get the animals out of the labs in favor of non-animal, truly progressive research. But until then, last night, for example, Jane Goodall had an event at UBC, and we know she's the friend of the primates. She's the champion of the primates. And so we held a silent vigil with our signs outside of the Chan Center, just bringing information to people. We had cards with us. I spoke as people were waiting in line, just saying, UBC continues to use primates in research. Harvard University ended their primate research program 2 years ago, and yet UBC continues with theirs. They built a new facility not 4 years ago. what is wrong with us? What's wrong with UBC? And we're asking Jane Goodall's help in trying to bring UBC up to modern science and primate research there. We have a new campaign beginning, and that's our Humane Charities Canada, and that's a searchable database. It'll be launched in May in conjunction with our anniversary, and we've got charities signing on to it already. I think we have over 70. These are medical research charities that people donate their money to, thinking that they're helping fellow man, when in fact much of that money goes into animal research. So we're developing a database of charities that don't test on animals, that use modern scientific methods and no animal is harmed. Some people really feel, well, we have to give to the cancer agencies because we need a cure. Okay, even with the Canadian Cancer Agency, who does test on animals, but they have areas within their research that they don't test. So we want people to direct their funds to those. And if enough charities hear that they are not receiving the money in favor of charities that do not test on animals, we believe that will affect change.
You touched a little bit before on this, but yeah, you know, for listeners going, wow, there's so much of this testing going on in Canada. And again, I want to emphasize the majority of this has nothing to do with advancing human medicine. What can listeners do to help end the suffering of animals in laboratories?
Okay, and briefly, I'll just give some people some numbers. 52% of the research at UBC is basic research. That means they're not looking for an end goal. They're not looking for a cure. 102,000 animals went through basic research in their last reporting year, which would be 2014 or 2015. And it's just to practice researching on animals, practice experimenting or the various things that they do to them. People can go to our website, and that's adavsociety.org. We've got lots of action items. I mean, of course, like any of the animal rights and charities, sadly, donations, we need money. But they can also just get involved. They can sign cards. They can sign our petitions. They can give cards out. They can share our information on their Facebook pages and other social medias. We need people behind us. The more we can show industry and government that there's a rage within society for what we're allowing to happen to animals, the sooner we'll have change.
Thank you so much, Laura Lee, for sharing this information with us today.
Well, I wish we didn't have to, but we do. And so, again, please, when people are shopping, look for the cruelty-free symbols. If it's not there, phone the company. Phone them and ask them why it isn't. And don't just take the word of the poor person answering the telephone system. Dig deeper. Keep going until you make sure that they hear your voice, that they hear your dissatisfaction with their business practices. We need to make a difference.
Thank you so much, Laura Lee. To find out more about the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, as Laura Lee just told us, you can visit their website at adavsociety.org.
And by the way, Laura Lee is a local realtor, and if you want to support somebody that does something good with their money, Laura Lee Shaw is the person to go to, and I certainly will be when I get to that point in my life, which might be never in Vancouver.
But it was just announced, too, last week that Laura Lee is the recipient of the Canadian Realtors Care Award for 2017, and that's for all the work that she does with a multitude of charities and activist organizations. It's not just this organization she works with.
She works her butt off. She feeds the people on the downtown east side as well. She's always got her car loaded up with food for them. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Please please join us on our next show, Friday, April 21st, where I will be your host for the Earth Day show. And we here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And today we'll leave you with a song by Paul McCartney called Looking for Changes. And I've never heard this before, but apparently it's about
animals in laboratories.
Wow. I don't know if anyone ever heard this before, but I'm looking forward to hearing it. So stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith after this. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals on this Easter weekend.